Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio, a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota National Guard, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA Healthcare System, and Beyond the Yellow Ribbon. Get updates and show information at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Your host is former Command Senior Enlisted Leader for the Minnesota National Guard, retired Command Sergeant Major Doug Wortham.
Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. Whether you're listening on a local Minnesota station, across the country on our national broadcast, or on your favorite podcast platform, we are glad that you're with us. This week on Minnesota Military Radio, we break down the 2026 Minnesota legislative session and what it means for veterans and families of military members across the state. Then we spotlight helmets to hard hats and how veterans can turn their skills, discipline, and drive into rewarding careers in the trades. Joining us for the first half of the program are Representative Carrie Ray Rauer of the Minnesota House of Representatives, who serves as co-vice chair of the Veterans and Military Affairs Division, and John Kelly, Director of Government Affairs for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Representative Ray Rauer and John, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you for having me.
Hey, Doug.
Now, John, you're a veteran of the program. We've had you on quite a few times, so I know that it's expected for the next two segments is that you're just going to be here, you know, just in case there's a question I really want to ask you, but I want to focus on the representative. Is that all right with you?
That's very all right with me, Doug.
All right, perfect. Well, Representative, thanks for being here. Thanks for spending some time with us, and congratulations. I mean, you're in your first term.
I am. I'm in my first term and just excited to be here today.
Yeah, well, that's awesome. How about if we get a quick intro of you? Tell us a little bit about your background and then ultimately what led you to want to run for the House of Representatives in Minnesota.
Oh, sure, Doug. So I am a representative for District 35B, which is Coon Rapids and two precincts of Andover. I was a science teacher for my career across 20 years. And then I was a Coon Rapids City Council member for 4 years and just want to run to serve my community and serve the people of Minnesota.
Well, that's awesome. So teaching is your background. And so I think maybe it'd be appropriate if we started off with a little bit of a teaching session. All right. So there is somebody listening right now. And you know what? They might not really understand how things happen in our state government, how things become a law, how do bills go through the process. So if you wouldn't mind, could you please give us that legislative 101 and kind of the overview of how things happen, maybe a little bit of how that sausage is made?
For sure. So as it being my first term, what I really found out is how difficult it is to get a bill passed through the final processes. And in reality, most bills don't pass. This session, I believe we had over 5,000 bills introduced. At the end of the day, we end up passing less than 100 of those generally. So what has to happen is you've got to have widespread support. Generally, they have been around for a few years. They've been fully vetted, talked about, researched. They have to go through the committee process where you have a committee hearing and other representatives ask you definitely some very challenging questions sometimes. They really dig into those bills. In addition, so I'm in the House of Representatives, but I need a partner in the Minnesota Senate who's willing to work that bill through the Senate pathway. And then eventually it comes to a floor vote, and you hope you get enough votes on the floor. And then if the House and Senate pass two different versions of the bill, even one word different, you have to either concur with the other body's version of that bill, or you have to have a conference committee if there are bigger differences and work those out so that you finally have a bill that is all the same between both bodies. And then the governor still has to sign it. So it is quite difficult to get your bills passed.
Now, John, she was saying, you know, 5,000 bills, only 100 passed. And, you know, it's about that repetitiveness of bringing something forward multiple times, getting more traction with it. I'm guessing this is the category of one of, I know what was a disappointing aspect of this legislative and that this legislative season, and that was the home property tax exclusion. Mm-hmm. So there's still hope, though, yeah, which we know isn't a combat multiplier, but there's still hope that maybe next year that can be something that gets more traction.
Absolutely, Doug. I think, you know, We are very fortunate at how the legislature approaches veterans issues. We had four bills that we introduced this session that were MDVA bills. They all passed, including one of our bills was the Vehicle for the Veterans Omnibus Bill. But that's the exception, not the rule. Other states have limits on the number of bills that legislators can introduce. Minnesota does not have that. And one of the bills that was introduced, and it was a – bills are alive when they're introduced, you know, for the entire two-year period, and then it ends. And so they may not get through all the committee stops, but they are live. And the Homestead Market Value Exclusion Bill was something that started last session, always made it into the end of, you know, the omnibus bills. And then when it came out of that conference committee that Representative Rehauer was discussing, it wasn't there. And I think, you know, with a new governor and, you know, all these legislatures always evolving with retirements and new members coming in, that I think there's an opportunity there for the CTF and other veterans organizations to bring that forward and hopefully get property relief updated for the first time in will be 19 years if it passes next year.
Well, I know that that'll be something that Representative, I'm sure you hear a lot about during this quote unquote off season, getting ready for the next legislative season. One of the things I want to make sure we have some time to talk about is the omnibus bill. So now this has happened five times. We've talked about it many, many times on this program. It was celebrated as a great success. But I'm just wondering what your thoughts and opinion is of it, because my understanding is that this year it passed unanimously. And that's a pretty big achievement. I'm just wondering what your thoughts are about that.
Well, in short, I think it's wonderful. I'm so happy that we have commitment to our veterans in the state of Minnesota. We have both parties, both sides of the aisle, and all of our leaders really in support of our veterans. And what's great about coming into this committee is that it is so bipartisan. We don't get the fighting, the disagreements as much. We all want to support our veterans. And that goes back to leadership from the governor, leaders of our House and our Senate bodies, all agreeing that they should have their own committee, and we have that in the House, and wanting to work together. And what's great is in this time of divided government, we had a tie in the House this session, which hasn't happened since 1999. We had unanimous yes votes and got it done in a tie even. So that just proves to you that we honor our veterans here in Minnesota.
Yeah, no, that is awesome. And as the co-vice chair, so what does that mean for you? Like what kind of role do you have to play in regard to that?
Well, first of all, I just want to say it is a huge honor to have become the co-vice chair of the Veterans Committee. And the role is really just keeping that discussion on the level of our commitment to our veterans, not swaying into different directions, not swaying into partisanship, setting that practice and being a role model for that, along with our co-chairs did a fabulous job, co-chair Bliss, co-chair Zhang, and our co-vice chair also all work together to keep us on the level of bipartisanship.
I want to talk about bipartisanship a little bit, because previously I had Chair Bliss on the program, and one of the things that he made very clear was in the room, there aren't R's and there aren't D's. We're going to talk together, we're going to work together, and we're going to try to solve or put things in place to solve veterans' issues. And so I'm wondering if you might be able to talk a little bit about the bipartisanship or lack there or the lack of fighting inside that room to get things done. I mean, I know there's probably some contention on things, but at the end of the day, it seems like you do work together really well to come out the other side with a recommendation that everybody can be satisfied with.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do want to give thank you to Chair Bliss, because I did hear him say those exact words in committee multiple times where he said, "We're all here together. I don't want any partisanship in the room," and set that stage for us all.
Yeah, no, real important. And of course, taking the party partisanship out of things is pretty important. Let's talk a little bit about, or maybe you can answer this here. Some people really don't follow the bills. They don't follow things going on in the Capitol all that closely, right? So like you gave us a legislative 101, which is still confusing. But anyway, there's got to be something that you have as a couple of takeaways. And I'm just wondering if you could just share with us some of the things that are real good takeaways for your first full session.
Yeah, well, I'm really excited about some legislation I was able to pass. I'm going to just break off in a direction of education since I was a science teacher. And one of my, you know, biggest accomplishments that I feel out of this 2 years of my first term in the legislature is passing an anonymous threat reporting system bill. It requires all school districts to use an anonymous threat reporting system. And what is incredible to me about this is we know that it will save students' lives. We know from Sandy Hook Promise that it has prevented mass school shootings, but even the bigger one is that it will prevent hundreds, even thousands of student suicides having this access in every single school. And just to kind of piggyback off of that, when we go into the direction of the Veterans Committee and being able to take part in that committee, what really surprised me coming into it was our, which I learned about and I knew nothing about, the secret war in Laos that took place during the Vietnam War.
Representative, so what we'll do is we'll come back, we'll talk about that because I want to spend more time on that. And otherwise, I'm going to have to cut you off. I don't want to be rude. It is time for a quick break, though. So please stay with us. This is Minnesota Military Radio. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. In the studio with me today is Representative Carrie Rehrauer. She's the co-vice chair of the Veterans and Military Affairs Division, and also John Kelly, the director of government affairs with the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. And Representative, before we went into break, I had to unfortunately cut you off, but you were starting to talk about SGUs. And, you know, that's a thing that you're proud that was able to get passed through this session. I'm wondering if you might want to talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah, absolutely. Our SGUs are our special guerrilla units that were working with and fighting alongside Americans in the secret war in Laos during the Vietnam War. And this is something, I suppose, because it was a secret war, I didn't learn about growing up in my history classes. And so it was a huge learning experience for me coming in last year. And just so glad that we were able to recognize these veterans and give them that recognition that they haven't had for many, many years, for decades now. So they came to the Capitol. We got to meet these veterans in person, shake their hands, and thank them for their service. And that's what they've been waiting for.
Yeah, no, that was a big accomplishment. And I know that, John, you had or you were on a team that, you know, had you guys kind of work through what this might look like and put a lot of time, a lot of effort into bringing something forward that ultimately turned into to a bill, which was then passed. So great work to you guys from the MDVA and the rest of the cohort.
Yeah, it was great. It was a total bipartisan team effort between the executive branch and the legislature and the community, and we got it done. And the Commander's Task Force also played a part. It was really great. We're glad it's done.
Yeah.
And we just had the bill signing this week with the governor, They were in person and just so happy to be there.
Yeah, it was. I saw a recap of the event. It looked like it was great. Because we'll run out of time, I want to make sure we get an opportunity to talk about a couple of other things because, you know, you alluded to the bipartisan effort inside the committee, but that doesn't mean that everything you all vote on is going to ultimately get approved in that session. And you had already said, you know, 5,000 bills, 100 were passed. And so I'm just wondering, specific to veterans, Representative, if you can talk about what you think is really one of the biggest unmet needs yet that you all want to try to get after.
Yeah, thank you, Doug, for asking the question. First, I do want to say, thankfully, most of the bills that we have come forward to our Veterans Committee, when we know that it's a need and this is a necessary thing to do, thankfully, most of those bills do pass. And something I'm really proud of is that we have effectively ended veteran homelessness here in Minnesota under Governor Wall's leadership. While those things are said, one thing we still need to do is do that homestead market exclusion bill and get that passed next year. Property taxes continue to go up, and this is for our folks that are 100% disabled. And so they need this homestead market exclusion to pass. We've spent almost two decades, so it's time to get it done.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I know that the members of the CTF and other agencies that are veteran-type service organizations, and of course our veterans listening, would sure love to finally get this to get across the bill. I mean, John, the last thing we need is Trent Dilks standing in the Capitol Rotunda yelling again about this. So maybe we can get it done for him, if nothing else.
I think that Trent is one of the best advocates for veterans we have in the state, and he's been pushing this really hard. And I think besides questions about our own bills, and this is a tax and Department of Revenue issue, not a really an MDVA issue, even though we serve and advocate for veterans, this is one of the number one things I get emails about from just veterans in the state is what's going on with the market value exclusion. And I think, you know, a lot of folks said, Representative Olson said, even at the bill signing earlier this week, and Chair Zhang agreed, 18 years is too long for an update. So hopefully the legislature can get that done.
I'm going to put this question out to both of you, and I'll let the representative go first. But, you know, Minnesota, we're very, very grateful here. And Minnesota does continue to invest pretty heavily in veterans programs, right? The services, cemeteries, and other things. And I'm just wondering if you can just talk to that commitment for us a little bit and what that means to our veteran community, our families, and to you as a legislator.
Well, first, I just want to say thank you to all of our veterans in the state. Thank you to your family members. Thank you for your service. Thank you for your commitment. Thank you for your hard work. What we know is that you have chosen to serve, and you know in making that choice that ultimately you could even be giving your life as a sacrifice for our country, for our state. And so because of that, there's nothing more important than us returning that commitment to you and honoring you and making sure that we have invested in all of our veteran programs.
What can you even add to that, John?
Not a lot. I think it's been amazing for me to serve in the role that I serve in and get to work closely with legislators like Representative Rehauer, who are not only talking about the work, they're doing the work. And Representative Rehauer carried a department bill for us this year that's going to help us leverage agency resources, non-monetary resources to partner with groups like the Disabled American Veterans on really important issues like homelessness and food insecurity. And so anything we can do to become more streamlined and cut down red tape as a state agency is important, and we have strong partners on both sides of the aisle to help us do that, to ultimately accomplish our mission to serve vets.
And something like that just seemed like really a no-brainer of a thing to push forward. So thank you, a representative, for signing on and supporting that. We've got about 3 minutes here, and John, I just want to give you an opportunity to talk about what someone out there can do. Like, and what I mean is they're listening to this show and they're like, my God, I want to try to get some stuff changed that support our veterans, our families, our service members. What would that process look like? How do they even get something to be considered through that legislative season?
Right. I think there are kind of a couple different tracks. I think first and foremost, what I usually recommend to folks, if they have a bill and they have a good idea, to talk to their representative. So you can find out who your representative is on the legislature's website and go to Who Represents Me and just punch in your address, and it'll tell you exactly who your state and federal elected officials are, and you can contact them. And they're going to have your interest at heart, and they're going to push for what you want, and they're going to at least engage with folks like me at the agencies to say, like, hey, I have a constituent. They have this idea. We had a bill just like that this session that passed. Senator Rasmussen had a constituent who thought – Korean War and Vietnam vets who didn't get their high school diploma through no fault of their own, through their service, should have that opportunity. And that was an idea from his constituent, and now it's law. So I think first and foremost, contact your elected officials. If you want the Department of Veterans Affairs to carry something, the biggest thing I will tell folks is get in touch with us in the summer. If you wait until close to the legislative session start in the winter, it's too late. We follow the governor's policy and budget development process, which we are doing this summer, but we are also, we don't know who the governor is going to be. We don't know who the commissioner is going to be. We don't know who the legislature makeup is going to be. And so there's a lot of uncertainty. But that being said, come talk to us in the summer. My contact info is listed on the MDVA website, and we are happy to, even if we don't carry the bill as a department bill, We are happy to provide technical assistance on any questions or fleshing out the bill or connecting folks to people that are more familiar with the topic area. You know, going back to the homestead value exclusion, that would something if you had questions about taxes, we might connect you with the Department of Revenue. Yeah. But we are happy to help. We're always happy to help. But come see us in the summer.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's awesome. Representative, I want to give you the last opportunity here. You've already said thanks quite a few times to our veteran community. But do you have any final thoughts, anything that you want people to know, any initiatives that you might be working on here in the last about 30 seconds that you want the public to know about?
Final thoughts. I think the most important thing for me is if you're a veteran out there and you're struggling, you are not alone. It's very common. Please reach out. Reach out to any of your local organizations. Reach out to the state organization. We are here for you, and we will get you support.
That's awesome. Thank you so much. And we always reference 888-LINK-VET is a great opportunity, a place to go to get more information. So Representative Rehrauer and John Kelly, we appreciate both of you coming in and spending just a few minutes with Minnesota Military Radio.
All right. Thank you, Doug.
Yeah, thanks, you
Doug.
Bet. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. June 14th, it's Flag Day, and it's the birthday of the United States Army. So before I introduce our next guest, we'd like to share a special message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Sean Mankey.
Since its birth on June 14, 1775, over a year before the Declaration of Independence, the United States Army has played a vital role in the growth and development of our nation. It all started in the spring of 1775, recognizing the need to enlist the support of all the American seaboard colonies. The Massachusetts Provincial Congress appealed to the Second Continental Congress in Philadelphia to assume authority for the New England Army. Congress voted to adapt the Boston troops and resolved to reform a committee to bring in a draft of rules and regulations for the government of an army. George Washington received his appointment as Commander-in-Chief of the Continental Army on July 3, 1775, and the rest is history. The Army's birthday is a celebration of our traditions and service to the nation. It's crucial for us to uphold these values to continue being the greatest land force in the world. Happy birthday, Army.
Thank you, General Mankey. We appreciate that. And joining me now in the studio is Justin Rost. He's the director of Minnesota's Helmets to Hard Hats. He's a Marine Corps veteran. Justin has built a career helping veterans, service members, and military families connect with apprenticeship opportunities and rewarding careers in the skilled trades across Minnesota. Justin, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Glad to have you. How about if you give us a little bit of an introduction? I already said, of course, you're a Marine Corps vet, but tell us a little bit about your background, your Marine Corps service, and then really how you got involved in this thing called Helmets to Hard Hats.
Sure. Yeah. So I was Marine Corps infantry, 4 years. I was stationed in Hawaii, you know, tough duty station there. I was in from 99 to 03, so, you know, not the most calm era of being in the military. But served honorably, got out, went into a lot of different careers, you know, like somebody else that's starting over, you start exploring options and became a real estate agent right before 2008, which
was a great time to be a real estate agent.
Yeah, not the ideal time. went on to, work construction a little bit and then, became a volunteer firefighter and EMT, helped serve my community after I'd helped serve the country. I still wanted to serve more. And then later on, got into the sheet metal industry and became a sheet metal worker here in Minneapolis, which led to the opportunity then to become director of the Helmets to Hard Hats program and allows me to help veterans across the state try and do what I did, try and make a life out of being a construction worker.
Yeah. Sheet Metal Union 10, is that what you said?
Yep, Local 10.
Yeah, Local 10. I think that was the one that my father-in-law was a member of for, of course, many, many years. I think that might have been in like his first job, you know, and after his military service and stayed there for decades. So anyway, all right, you're a director of this thing called Helmets to Hard Hats. So tell us a little bit about the position as a director. What does that even mean?
Sure. So Helmets to Hard Hats is a national program, but also a state program. So we do have a national Helmets to Hard Hats program that covers all 50 states. We have a partner organization that's in Canada that does the same thing for Canadian military. We focus on the America side. And then in Minnesota, they really liked the idea of the program, and some interested individuals wanted to get it going here so we could have a foothold and have some skin in the game in the state to help Minnesota veterans get into the skilled construction trades and into the apprenticeship programs. So they created the Helmets to Hard Hats program in Minnesota. So I'm the director of the Minnesota program, which I work with the national program to make sure that we're working together cohesively to help veterans.
And, you know, just thinking about the program, right? Things don't just start overnight. Obviously, there's an idea and it kind of brews and you got to get some support. So looking nationally, I mean, like why did this even come to being, you know, this program? Why do we need to have it?
Right. It was actually created in 2003 under the same funding that earmarked funding as Wounded Warrior Project. So it was created around the same time. Then when they started cutting earmarks and funding started going away and stuff, it was actually picked up by the North American Building Trades Unions as a national program to help the apprenticeship programs connect with vets and get them into the career. As for why, I mean, it's such a great career. There's a lot of misinformation or misunderstanding about construction, that it's a secondary career, that it's what you do if you didn't go to college, if you didn't go to get a degree. And it couldn't be further from the truth. I mean, certainly it is a pathway for folks who don't want to do those things. But also the amount of math and technical skill and training that you have to go through to be able to do these jobs, do them safely and make sure that they're going to last, requires an immense amount of attention to detail. And that's something that veterans have tenfold over the usual person. So, I mean, they're a natural fit for it.
Yeah. I don't know if you can answer this directly, but I believe things that I've read is that the number of people entering the skilled trades has decreased over time. And so I don't know what it was like back when the program started in 2003, but I'm just wondering, you know, how much this program, at least on the veteran side, really supports adding people into the labor market in the skilled trades.
Yeah. As far as the Minnesota program goes, we've got a pretty good working relationship with other veteran employment offices and different departments. So we've had a pretty good impact. In 2023, we were the community partner of the year with vocational rehabilitation with the VA. And our impact has been felt in the trades. Every year we come together and we look at the list of veterans that we worked with and how many of them got in the trades. And it's been a pretty good number. We've been doing pretty well.
Yeah. Now, you said something previously that I thought was kind of interesting. The thought that entering something in that construction field, in the trades field, might be something secondary, right? There's nothing sexy about it. But here's what I know, or at least what I believe I know, is that there's some pretty darn good money in the trades.
Yeah. Most of the careers now, when you hit the journeyman level especially, you're $100,000 a year or more just in wage. And then you've got your fringe benefits, which are really, really top tier. Most of them come with 80-20 medical, dental, vision, all of that. Plus the education is low to no cost. I want to say free. In many cases it is, but it low to no cost in many cases. For 5 years of sheet metal school, I paid $2,500. And then when I passed and I turned out and became a journeyman, they cut me a check for the $2,500. So my education and 5 years of training to become a journey level worker was free as long as I completed the training.
And, you know, a basic level when you first hit journeyman, you said that could be six figures. And so the numbers that are rolling in my head say something like, let's see, 5 years, $2,500, got the $2,500 back. I'm now making over $100,000 a year. And oh, by the way, I'm not $300,000 in debt from student loans.
And on top of it, you can use your GI Bill benefits to receive a housing allowance while you're in apprenticeship. So that also is something that you can factor in to help you when you're at that lower wage.
Yeah.
But when we are talking about that lower wage, we're still talking about a decent starting wage for any career. Matter of fact, the laborers, I believe, right now are starting at around $35 an hour in the Twin Cities area.
Yeah, that's not bad.
No.
Bad at all. Yeah, wow. Well, I mean, definitely an incentive, right, to take a look at it. And, you know, we'll talk more about, you know, kind of how you work a little bit with the MDVA and other entities to make this thing happen. But, you know, we've got about a minute left here. And you touched briefly about the veterans and how they fit in naturally into roles like this. And so I want you to expand on that for me a little bit and why you think a veteran is such a strong fit for the apprenticeship program to go on and get into these skilled trades.
It's almost like apprenticeship was tailor-made for folks that have served in the military. Anyone who's been to boot camp, you learned how to do a whole lot of things that maybe you thought you knew how to do, but they told you you were doing it wrong. So you had to learn these things.
So there's your way and my way and then the right way.
Right. There's the Marine Corps way and then there's every other way.
Right.
But you learned how to do things in a very, very high stress environment in a very, very short, condensed amount of time. And basically they said, I'm going to show you how to do this. Then I want you to do it. Right. The nice thing about apprenticeship is, I mean, it's in that same vein where you learn how to do it from a journey worker who's been doing it for a long time. So you're learning the most professional way to do it that's within code, does everything right. And they're going to take the time to show you. Then they're going to have you do it. They're going to inspect your work. And then they're going to continue to build off of that foundation and teach you how to do all facets of the job.
Oh, that's awesome. All right. Hey, let's take a quick break here. We'll come back. We'll get in a little bit more detail. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I've got Justin Rost in the studio with me. He's the director of Minnesota Helmets to Hard Hats. Justin, before we went into break, you were talking about how this apprenticeship thing works. You know, they'll sit along somebody who's been doing the job, get the training. In the military, we call that left seat, right seat type of training, which I think is a great approach because it works. It's been demonstrated to work for our military for years and years and years. But aside from that, there has to be a process or a decision to actually look at that trade or to go into that trade to start this program. And there's a bunch of trades to choose from. So my question for you is twofold. One, do you work with every trade? And how do you help somebody navigate to the trade that might be best for them?
Yeah, I mean, from the minute that they start planning the job and leveling the ground till the day they do a ribbon cutting ceremony on a building, there's somebody from some trade there. So there's a lot of choices. Anything you look at in a building was put in by somebody who's in the skilled trades. So when we get to talking to veterans about what they want to do, it's good to know what fits their lifestyle, what kind of career do they want to have, understanding where they're coming from and if they have any experience, different things like that. And so I have a chance to talk with most of the veterans that come through the program. Some, they come in, they know what they want, and that's what they want. We get them the information, they get rolling. But for any veteran who doesn't know or doesn't understand the trades, there's so many different facets of the trades. And yes, I do work with all of them. Yes, I know every trade and I know what they do in every trade. So I work specifically with each individual apprenticeship program. I work with the contractors. I work with the veterans and I work with like leadership in the unions and things like that to make sure that I'm keeping up to on my information that I can hand off to veterans.
Do you have to have some of those like hard to have conversations? And what I mean is, hey, look, at I'm really interested in being a mason. Okay. But you know what? I'm an older guy. Maybe I can't lift, you know, more than 50 pounds anymore. It might be a little bit more harder labor than something else. Right. And so do you have to have those kinds of conversations with the veterans as they're coming in and going through the different things that they might be interested in?
Yeah, for sure. You know, I mean, when you get a veteran that has a disability, you, of course, want to present them every opportunity you can. But the reality is if somebody can't perform the functions of the job won't be available. Yeah. So it's having conversations and helping understand that early so that we can try and get to that and help have them have an understanding and try and work through and see what we can do. And if there are some, we've had veterans that have had bad vertigo, things like that. And being on a ladder is not good for them.
Yeah.
So what we've tried to do is find opportunities like in a shop setting where maybe they could sit down if they have to do their work, things like that. So we certainly do focus on helping the veteran as a wraparound service, not just throw them to the wolves and leave them treading in deep water.
Yeah, sure. And I would imagine that, you know, part of that relationship building you have with all of the individual trades, the leadership and you know, the people you have to deal with, you don't want to bring a veteran into their organization that needs an immediate accommodation just to give them a job. I mean, there has to be some realism here as well.
Right. And I mean, the job is what the job is.
Right.
And so just like any other career, if accommodations can be made, great. If they can't be made, then we just need to have that out in the open right away.
But I think a message here is don't let that be a reason not come talk to you either.
Right.
Because you very well might still be able to find something that can be that fulfillment you're looking for post-military service.
Exactly. And if you have like a PMP, project management degrees, anything like that, any experience in that field, we do also help with those jobs as well.
All right. You said you know all of the trades. Important, obviously, if you're going to be providing advice and counsel to our veterans about going into trades and the apprenticeship programs. It's one thing to have a relationship with those trades, with the skilled labor people, the different unions, et cetera. I would imagine it's important to have relationships with other entities as well, aside from them. I'm thinking MDVA. But can you talk about some of the entities or agencies that are important to your success?
Absolutely. I look at this as a collaborative effort. I don't look at it as a standalone thing that I can do all by myself. So I work very closely with the VA, Vocational Rehabilitation, MACV, especially their employment side, helping homeless veterans or near homeless veterans get on their feet so that we can get them housed. I work with DEED, Career Force, pretty much anybody that works in veteran employment. If they're working with veterans, I work with community programs from northern Minnesota, different things like that too. So anytime a veteran comes in and says construction, they end up at my door, and that's the way I wanted it to be.
One of the things that we talked about in our production meeting today was that you want to work with everybody, but you don't want to own the veteran. In other words, you want them to get the help, the resource from wherever it is best suited for them. And so if you're not the person to solve a problem, you're going to try to help find or set that veteran up with the entity that will be able to help solve or get after the thing they're trying to get after.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a collaborative effort. And ultimately, the goal is to help the veteran, right? The end goal is to have them get into a productive career, have the help they need in whatever facet that is, whether we're talking about mental health, we're talking about employment, we're talking about housing. It's to get them to the people who could best help them. It just so happens that when it comes to construction, I'm that best person.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, we'll give you an opportunity to say it here at the end, but helmetstohardhats.org is your website. I think it's important to mention that and get that out there for people to go look at, because I'm assuming ton of information out there, obviously how to get a hold of you, what kind of information might be needed to get the process started.
Right. So you do have to create a profile. It is free to you. We're not going to call you on a sunny Thursday to ask you how you're doing. No, we ask that you go on there, create a profile. You can find information about all the different trades, but we can certainly have that conversation if you want to have one-on-one about that. We give them sample testing information, do an introduction to the trades that they're interested in, and then also try and make sure that they're spun up on all of the best information they can have and put the right foot forward when trying to get in.
Just a couple of minutes here, but a lot of veteran benefits for education available through the state, obviously federal benefits that were earned. Can you talk again just a little bit about what someone might be eligible for financial assistance-wise if they come in and are accepted into an apprenticeship program?
Yeah, so all of the apprenticeship programs that Helmets to Hard Hats work with are accredited programs that utilize the GI Bill. So you won't receive a per credit like you would at a traditional university or a tech college, but what you will get is that housing allowance. And then that will go on and degrade every – I think it's every 3 months now. It degrades like 20% or something like that. So it's a nice boost because in those trades, you're going to work. And as you're working about every 1,000 hours in most of the trades, you're going to receive an increase in your wage. So it's a scaled – it's a scaled program, right? So as your wage goes up and your GI Bill steps back, it should be like a scale balancing out where you don't – feel that hit so much when your GI Bill is disappearing, but you do see the increases in your wage and the amount of work you're doing and the type of work you're doing.
And you will work with any veteran regardless of when they served, right? So, I mean,
yes.
If I got out 30 years ago and I'm still able and meet the qualifications, you could help place me if I'm eligible otherwise.
Any veteran, reservist, guard, active serving who's transitioning out, we work with everybody. The only full stop is dishonorable discharge.
Okay. I was going to ask you that next, if there's any other eligibility requirement.
That is it.
Okay. Yep. And it's okay not to have a clean shaven face, or it's okay to have some longer hair too, right?
I don't know. I might hold them accountable, but no, I live these days with a beard, so.
Yeah, right. Okay. 30 seconds. Where do people go again? And give that final plug for coming and supporting your entity.
So you can find us at helmetstohardhats.org. That's helmetstohardhats.org. You can get started with a profile. You can look me up, or you can walk into any Career Force Center, VA, anywhere else, and tell them you're interested in construction, and they'll point you in my direction.
Yeah, and construction means everything, not That's just right. Actual hammers and nails.
Right.
Awesome. Well, hey, Justin, you've been fun to have in the studio, and thanks for the great work you're doing taking care of our veterans, helping them get through these programs and get into those great trades careers. I know that they're wonderful, so thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
You bet. That is our guest, Justin Ross, the director of the Minnesota Helmets to Hard Hats. Make sure that you do check out that website, helmetstohardhats.org. Before we close out the show, here's a reminder that the next Food Pantry for Veterans is Tuesday, June 16th at the Minneapolis VA Medical Center from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. This event takes place every third Tuesday of the month. Thank you for joining us each week and for supporting our mission to bring you meaningful and informative conversations. We always welcome your feedback and guest suggestions. Please visit MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Click on Contact Us. You can catch up on past episodes of your favorite podcast platform or at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Please tune in next week when we sit down with representatives from the Veterans Benefits Administration and the National Cemetery Administration. We'll help you better understand how to apply for VA benefits and file claims. We'll also learn about the burial benefits available to service members and veterans. I'm Doug Wortham, your host on Minnesota Military Radio. Have a productive week, and please take a moment to thank and honor those who have served and those who continue to serve and sacrifice so we can all enjoy the liberty and freedom this great country has to offer.